Please call, if the clerk would please call the case.
3240438 in re marriage of Maihan Liefke and Eckerd Liefke, Appellee.
Mr. DiDomenico, you may proceed.
Justice Holdridge, and may it please the court, again, Michael DiDomenico for my Liefke. This is a maintenance modification case where the result below was the termination of my client's permanent maintenance award, effectively for the sole reason that the judge believed that she did not make sufficient efforts towards becoming financially self-sufficient and becoming employed. Standard of review is deferential. It's abuse of discretion. I'd like to spend some time this morning explaining why that hurdle is cleared by our side. Familiar principles govern all 510 modification proceedings. It's a two-step process. Step one is, has there been a substantial change in circumstances? Step two is looking to the various statutory maintenance factors to determine if there should be a modification. Our primary contention is that the judge erred in even finding a substantial change in circumstances because there was no change in circumstances at all. The judge's dispositive finding on the change in circumstances issues, C-988 of the record, where the court found that the petitioner, my client, as a matter of fact, has the ability to work. She has simply chosen not to do so since the 2019 German appellate court's decision. This determination constitutes a substantial change in circumstances. Let's talk about why that constitutes an abuse of discretion. As the finding alluded to, these parties were divorced in Germany after protracted German proceedings, oddly enough, applying Illinois law. The court there divided the property and awarded my client permanent maintenance. And in doing so, found that at the time of those judgments that she was making, she had it was dilatory in making efforts towards becoming self-sufficient. And in response to that finding, the German courts did what Illinois law tells us to do, is that you are to impute income at a level commensurate with her abilities and reduce the award. And that is precisely what the German judgment did. The German judgment awarded her a fixed amount of money, then reduced it to the penny by a minimum wage job. And why is that important? Because the court in Germany found that Ms. Liefke, given her emotional and physical station in life, was not employable beyond a minimum wage level job. Flash forward to the modification proceeding that gives rise to this appeal filed by Mr. Liefke, and we have a judge finding that Ms. Liefke's failure to go actually get a minimum wage job constitutes a substantial change in circumstances. Our position is the only thing that has changed is that a few years has gone by since the judgment was entered. Her maintenance award, as I just said, has baked into it a mathematical reduction for a minimum wage job. Both the German courts and Judge Skirin below, who ratified these findings and agreed with them, said that a minimum wage level job is all she can do. That is her ceiling as far as employability. That is her ceiling as far as what income she can earn. That being the case, and that is not challenged by my opponent, there's no cross appeal in this case. That was a finding both by the German court and ratified by Judge Skirin after hearing the testimony of these parties. So that being the case, we believe that the abuse of discretion here is that the judge found that Ms. Liefke's failure to actually go out and get a minimum wage job constitutes a substantial change in circumstances. That job is already baked into her maintenance award. So there is no change in circumstances because the failure to do so has already been accounted for by the German courts applying Illinois law. And that's what the court, in our view, lost sight of here, is that the court had already factored in an imputation and a reduction of her maintenance award, which is exactly what this district said in the Mattson case, is what courts are supposed to be doing when confronted with permanent maintenance payees and dilatory efforts towards self-sufficiency. You impute and you reduce. You do not terminate. That's what this court said in the Mattson case, and that's precisely what the German courts did. So to the extent that the judge found that Judge Skirin found that Ms. Liefke's failure to actually go out and get a minimum wage job somehow constituted substantial change in circumstances, there is no case law supporting that, and it's simply contrary to the record. The court was only able to cite, and my opponent in his brief cited, these general propositions of Illinois maintenance law that at times that a failure to become financially self-sufficient or take appropriate steps may constitute a substantial change in circumstances. No argument here. That's true. But I think what the court lost sight of, and frankly, what I think my opponent in his brief does, is sort of use these general principles to try to apply to every, as if they can apply to every maintenance case in a way that is dispositive of permanent maintenance rights. And I think that just ignores the sort of, what one of your colleagues in Elgin likes to tell me is that every divorce case sort of is sui generis, and that you have to, whether what constitutes a substantial change in circumstances is dependent upon the two people you have in front of you, and the family you have in front of you, and the prior judgments and the prior adjudications that have been made in the case. Here, again, if all she can do is get a minimum wage job and that's already been factored in, what's the change? Nothing. So there has been no substantial change in circumstances here. Even if the court were to find that Ms. Liefke's failure to go out and actually get a minimum wage job constitutes a substantial change in circumstances, there's no requirement under Illinois law that maintenance be either modified or terminated. Applying the rest of the factors that would be required at step two, there's no question that every other factor effectively favors the continuation of maintenance. The only other factor the court looked to was the length of payments, the length of time that Mr. Liefke has been paying maintenance. But Mr. Liefke has been paying maintenance was paying a long time. The German proceedings were protracted. They took a long time. That was already factored into the German court's thinking and the German court's judgment, frankly. Every other factor favors the continuation of maintenance. My client, there's no dispute here. Nobody is suggesting that she has any chance of living within the marital standard of living absent an award of maintenance. Nobody would ever suggest, and Mr. Liefke does not suggest, that he can't afford to continue to pay. This man is making over $1 million a year in pharmaceutical business against a $4,000 a month monthly maintenance award. Frankly, no argument could be made that he does not have the ability to pay. And on the other side of the equation, we have my client, who is now living in public housing in California, and frankly needs this maintenance to survive. The judgment calls for the termination of her maintenance in March of next year. I don't know what she's supposed to do if this judgment is reversed, because she'll never survive on a minimum wage job, which is what all the courts say that is all that she can do. This is not a case where you have a maintenance payor coming into court and saying, "I'm on the verge of retirement. I've suffered a catastrophic injury. I can't continue to make money in the fashion that I was doing so." That is not what you have here. This case was decided solely on a judge's perception of lack of sufficient efforts to become employed. And I challenged my opponent in his brief with lots of time to file a response to show me a case in Illinois law, in the Illinois common law, where a permanent maintenance award was terminated for that sole reason. And there was no such case that has ever been that I was able to find. There's no such case that the judge was able to cite below. My opponent in his brief could not cite a case either. Again, it is true that within the Illinois maintenance common law, there is a general understanding of a duty to become self-sufficient, or at least efforts to make to become self-sufficient. But again, that duty and how much weight it is given, especially if it is given dispositive weight, is impact has to turn on the particular person you have before the court. This is not somebody who has a law degree. This is not somebody that has an MBA and is still a young person despite or has a PhD. This is somebody who can only do a minimum wage level job. And that is precisely why permanent maintenance was awarded in the first place, and why the court's findings that her failure to become employed at a minimum wage level job when it was already imputed to her constitutes an abuse of discretion. Your Honors, I don't have anything else right now, and I'm still within my time. But if Your Honors, unless Your Honors have any questions, I'm prepared to yield the balance of my time.
Any questions from the bench?
None. I have maybe one, maybe two. It's never limited to one. So, counsel, I'm only talking about step number one, substantial change. What are your thoughts regarding an 8.25 minimum wage rate in 2019 versus what I think the court suggested was $15, or what the evidence suggested was $15 and some change currently. Is that a substantial change?
I don't know if it constitutes a substantial change in circumstances, the minimum wage job. If there was evidence that established the amount of the minimum wage has gone up since the German judgment, might that have been a fairer outcome here, to maybe
Well,
simply
firmer
reduce?
ground, maybe you're saying.
Correct. I think so, but an outright termination, I think, finds no support.
And I'm only talking about prong number one.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, okay.
Does the change in the minimum wage? There's case law. There's case law that talks about, that actually breaks down increases in income by like 20% or 10%, and if that
Yeah.
constitutes substantial change in circumstances. So this is sort of the sort of a cousin of that, right? Because we have an imputation of a minimum wage, and has minimum wage gone up enough to constitute a substantial change in circumstances? I think it would go under the reasoning of those cases that talk about sort of percentageize whether a change in circumstances has occurred. But okay, if minimum wage has doubled or tripled, maybe, perhaps that could constitute a substantial change in circumstances on this case. I think that, along with that is an accompanying assessment of the cost of living that is also accompanied,
Yeah.
because one is a function of the other. So,
Yeah, minimum wages increases with inflation at times.
absolutely. So,
Thank you.
any other questions from the court?
no, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Schwab, you may reply or respond.
Thank you, Justice Holdridge, and may it please the court. I am Eric Schwab. I'm the attorney for Eckhard Leifke, the appellee. And I'll just start by saying that on the one hand, this is clearly a very fact-driven appeal, but it's an appeal whose implications go directly to the policy aims of maintenance in Illinois.
Vinegar for the it's
Oh,
telling
just excuse me, Mr. Schwab.
Yeah,
We're
let me
getting some interference
confirm.
from someone.
No.
I don't know if
Or even the dog.
Opposing hear that, yeah.
I think it's the host.
Little vinegar and it will take that smell
Yeah, it is.
completely
Well, I will
away.
text her.
Okay, is it corrected? Do we think?
I think so. I'll
Okay,
give it a shot.
Mr. Schwab, thank you.
Thank you. Well, so I was saying, you know, this is very
Yeah.
fact-driven and it was at a certain time jurisdictionally complex, but it
I think it's coming back. Mr.
Yeah,
Drew
I'm gonna chat.
DeVinico.
I'm gonna chatter.
I swear by it, the vinegar. I do clean out my coffee
Who's
pot.
talking about vinegar?
I think we're talking about holiday
And
recipes.
then just do the water.
Yeah, I do too.
I
Where
just
is that
sent
coming
a I
from?
just sent a chat.
Yeah. He was awesome.
They turned
There it
off
goes.
the mic. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we'll afford you some extra time, Mr.
Oh my
Thank
gosh,
you.
I'm so sorry, everybody. I'm going to turn the clock back.
Okay, and make sure we don't get anything from, talking there.
So I was just starting by saying that behind all the factual complexities of this case, including having a German judgment, the central issue in this case does go directly to Illinois maintenance policy aims. And specifically, this case is somewhat of a test case of this widely stated Illinois policy that all maintenance recipients have a good faith obligation, an affirmative obligation and duty to make efforts to become financially independent by seeking and accepting appropriate employment. And that's a policy that's been stated in many of the cases that are cited in our brief and Lankner, Cantrell, Bernay, etc.
Well, doesn't
And
Lankner say that it's not required in every case, particularly when it would do no good?
well, I don't know that if it would do no good, it's certainly
No,
a
I mean, isn't that
factor.
what Lankner says?
Well, it says that it's not required in every. I don't know that it's that easy. It can be offset. It's not dispositive in every case.
Okay.
But I have not seen a case where it's not considered a factor. It's just that in some cases the weight is very low. And that's certainly the case because it's offset by another offsetting policy concern, which is the right of maintenance recipients to maintain the marital standard of living to the extent that's possible and it's affordable. Although again, that's certainly not an absolute right. It's an entitlement or a goal of the policy. But in this case, the first part of that policy, of the obligation to make efforts to become self-supporting. This is a test case for that because this is not a case of somebody who has been dilatory in their efforts to become self-supporting. This is not a case of somebody who has been unable to do better than a minimum wage job. This is somebody who has refused to seek or obtain employment all along since the divorce filing. This fact was noted and addressed in detail in the 2013 German judgment, which is in the record. It was addressed again in the 2019 German appellate judgment that was in the record. And it's admitted in Ms. Lifke's opening brief when she refers to this obligation as her phrases, a so-called obligation. She's saying to me, this is no obligation. And this goes then, the policy problem here is illustrated by Ms. Lifke's argument, which says, as far as a substantial change of circumstances goes, if I just refuse to work all along, I have a get out of maintenance termination free card because I'll never change my circumstances. So the circumstances have never changed on that basis. Now, again, contrary to what Mr. DiDomenico, I think, suggested, multiple cases have underscored that a maintenance recipient's failure to make any good faith effort to find employment certainly can establish the predicate for a finding of a substantial change in circumstances. And that was said as recently as this court's Mattson case, where it explained, and that's an unpublished case, but it's after 2021. So, but it's persuasive or interesting here because they say, in this context, substantial change of circumstances is a term of art. It's describing the factual predicate to initiate a maintenance modification proceeding under Section 510. I think that conceptually one can see that there is a change in circumstance because when that maintenance order is handed down under Illinois law, it brings with it that obligation. And so at the latest, that obligation triggered for Ms. Lifke in 2019 when the German appellate court issued that judgment. And so the change in circumstance was after that point, her failure to comply with that obligation. She made no effort to find employment. But I also want to address, and you heard this in Mr. DiDomenico's argument, there's kind of a bait and switch she's using where, on the one hand, it was the predicate in this case for the maintenance modification proceeding. But when it came to Judge Skaron's order on modification, that was not solely and exclusively predicated on Ms. Leifke's refusal. And I'm going to use that word, refusal to find work. Judge Skaron found expressly, Mr. DiDomenico cited the page, in fact, for me, that he found she had the ability to work and that her testimony about not being able to work was not credible. And so she's saying she doesn't have to work, but that wasn't the basis solely of of Judge Skaron's ruling. He looked at all of the factors under Section 510 and 504. And he said expressly in his ruling, to the extent he didn't discuss certain factors, it didn't mean he hadn't considered him. But he looked expressly at the duration of the marriage, which is a factor, versus the duration of the maintenance received and the duration of the maintenance paid. He also looked under the catch-all provisions of other relevant factors. He looked at her credibility, her lack of credibility, her complete lack of good faith in her trial presentation about her situation, about her ability to work, about her purported hardship, all of these circumstances, about even her financial condition. I will just point out, we proved in court, and it's in the record, she didn't apparently file tax returns after 2019. So we had no evidence to put to the court that would show a tax return to show if she had other sources of income, had other sources of employment. She's just not filing tax returns. So the argument, well, she might suffer hardship without maintenance, and even the argument that she's unable to maintain the marital lifestyle, are being made kind of in a vacuum because she actively prevented any evidence from coming in of what her financial circumstances were. She's not filing tax returns. But so the two-step here is that this is, yes, this was the predicate for the finding of a substantial change in circumstances, the refusal to work. But Judge Skaron looked at all of the elements in making his decision. And he found, and under all of those factors, he did not immediately terminate maintenance. He gave a balanced decision. He said, I'm going to grant her 2 more years of maintenance, but then it has to terminate at this point. And I think the numbers bear that out. By the time his ruling takes effect, the termination takes effect in March of 2026, Ms. Leifke will have received maintenance for approximately 18 years. 18 years of maintenance for a marriage that from the wedding till the divorce filing was approximately 11 years. That from the marriage until the final German judgment, which, as Mr. DiDomenico admitted, was the prolonged German proceeding, but it was just under 15 years. So even if you say a 15-year maintenance, this is an extraordinary, I mean, strike that, a 15-year marriage, apologies. This is an extraordinary length of marriage. This is far beyond what I think one would see in or sees in many of these courts. And I think that's also important to keep in mind when we're looking at the other precedents in this case, the Bernay case and other cases where the courts have said, well, this isn't terminating. Don't go so far as to terminate the maintenance here. These are all cases where you have very often 17-year marriages, 20-year marriages, more than 20-year marriages. And these are cases where the termination of maintenance is being litigated 7 years after the divorce in most cases, or you know, less than 10 years after the divorce. So that sets this case apart. The sheer duration of the maintenance relative to the length of the marriage. This is not, again, somebody who's been dilatory, but somebody who categorically refuses to seek employment and says, I don't have to. That part of the law doesn't apply to me. It's a so-called obligation is all it is. So I'd like to talk a bit about this offsetting issue of the entitlement of a spouse to maintain the marital lifestyle to the extent that the payor spouse can afford it and to the extent that the other spouse can never possibly work hard enough to achieve it. It can't be the case that that's an open-ended and absolute rule. Otherwise, you would have that would imply that every marriage of whatever length, as long as one of the spouses comes out unable to maintain the marital lifestyle and the other spouse does, every marriage of that sort is going to result in indefinite maintenance because the other spouse will never be able to achieve that much. And even if one allowed for that fact, I think it's a different analysis here if you have a spouse that isn't trying to reach that level of maintaining the marital standard of living, but refuses to try. And in this one, I think we need to look at the discussion that was had with Mr. DiDomenico about the German appellate court's imputation of income. The German appellate court at the time imputed income. It was a lower minimum wage, and that's already been discussed. But I think what's important here is the German appellate court didn't say, we impute income and hereby say that wipes out any obligation to seek work. And and Mr. DiDomenico didn't point the court to any case in Illinois that says if you impute income, that wipes out the spouse's obligation to become financially independent. And it doesn't take long or much reflection to figure out why. If that were the case, spouses seeking maintenance would invite an imputation of income because it would obviate themselves from ever needing to find work. And it would again mean there's no change in circumstances as long as they do nothing and remain dependent. I think a common sense understanding of imputation is the imputation says we're going to impute minimum wage labor as an incentive to the maintenance recipient to go out and get a minimum wage job. And in response to your question, Justice Bertani, about the changes in minimum wage, I think what's interesting to reflect here is that this goes all the way back to the 2013 German judgment, where the German court is saying, I don't think she can do better than minimum wage. However, if Ms. Leifke had complied with her obligation to seek work, and wait, I'll break up, not only that, in both German judgments, they said, and by the way, the evidence showed us, this is in these judgments, there's a job out there for her, a part-time job in the German consulate that she could take on. And as the children become emancipated, she'll be able to work full-time. So this is somebody who, if she had taken on a minimum wage position all the way back in 2013, who knows what the evidence would have been, what this proceeding would have looked like if this person had been working that long, had obtained experience, had possibly gotten increases in her compensation commensurate with her experience. You could have somebody that might be able to maintain the marital standard of living. And I'll point out, as we pointed out in our brief, it's important to note that in the 2019 German judgment, it made a finding for setting maintenance on that marital standard of living, which was just under $5,000 a month at the time, then it imputed approximately 900,000 of income in order to bring the maintenance level that Mr. Leifke is paying down to just over $4,000. But so the ability of a person, if they're working for an extended period of time at let's say starting at minimum wage, it's entirely possible that by the end of that, they could be making $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year. I don't know. That's speculation. What's so unique about this case, what makes it such a test case, is that this is a person who refused to even try, and not just briefly, who has refused consistently for over a decade not to even try, not to even get it a chance. And you heard Mr. DiDomenico, he's sort of saying, well, we don't know what's going to happen after March 2026. It's astonishing. Again, the incentive should be in place. This person could get employment, could try to become self-supporting. At the end of the day, if you don't have the spouse who's receiving maintenance making some effort to become self-supporting, all of these other offsetting and balancing policy concerns fall apart. You have people instead getting a situation of permanent dependence, and then protecting that permanent dependence by not making efforts to help themselves, by not making efforts to improve themselves. And on the other hand, you have a payor, all of whose efforts to improve themselves after the marriage, and again, this is richly documented in the German judgments and in the trial record. Dr. Leifke worked hard and still worked very hard to improve his employment and his income earning power. And somehow that just becomes. That just becomes an albatross where that means he can never get out of this financial dependence of his former spouse from many, many years ago. And I just don't think that that's consistent with Illinois policy. And I just think it's important to see this in the context so that the claims that, oh, well, this court, if you don't rule one way, you might be throwing somebody out on the street. It's important to know I don't know that that's the case. I don't think the evidence supported that. I think Ms. Leifke's lack of credibility at trial undermines her ability to say that based on the evidence. But also, to the extent that's even true, it's a product of choice. And in the Shen versus Shen case, there's a nice comment, and this is referring to the maintenance payor in that case, who sought a modification of maintenance because he had his income had been reduced at his job, I believe at Trader Joe's. And the court said you have to assess in these claims whether the person's change in financial situation is a product of circumstance or a product of choice. And I think in this case, it's clear that Ms. Leifke's circumstances are a product of her choice because she has chosen not to even start working. She chose that in 2013. She chose that in 2019. And as far as we can say, that choice continued at least up to the trial. And, important that the evidence that was in front of Judge Skarin, not just the unwillingness to work, but the lack of good faith effort. You had evidence that while she's not working, she's going hiking with her family in the Alps. And when she's asked about it at trial, she doesn't want to give a straight answer. She's moves to Southern California and is filing tax returns there that don't disclose her home address, that use her accountant's address. She moves to Southern California for reasons she could never explain other than the weather is nice. Well, it's also one of the highest costs of living in the country. We've got credit card records showing she's going to Home Depot. She's a member of Costco. She's shopping at Whole Foods. She's shopping at Trader Joe's. We've got charges at the Mat and Me, at a yoga studio. She's doing Zumba. And I can explain what Zumba is briefly if that's something the court's not familiar with. It's a
I would
form
like a
of
demonstration, sir.
that's coming. It's a form of dance exercise. So
I
this is
know what it
somebody
is.
saying, I can't sit, I can't stand, I can't work, but I can do yoga whenever it's available. I can do dance exercise. Not only that, the money. And this was in the record. At her deposition, as we're deposing her, we say, do you have money? And she unfolds a stack of 50s and $100 bills and says she doesn't know how much it is. And this is because we have financial records that we put into the record, financial statements showing that she's thousands of dollars are getting deposited and withdrawn, deposited and withdrawn. But this is somebody who says, I'm living on public assistance. I'm just about to land in the street. This is somebody who produces notes from a
Schwab,
lender. Yes.
Mr. Schwab, the red light's been on for a while. I'll let you run
Oh.
over because of the problems at the beginning of your argument. At this time, just a concluding statement, please.
Sure. Just in conclusion, I would say that this is not a case about hardship or income inequality. It's a case about accountability and compliance with the law of a maintenance recipient. This is somebody who has refused to comply with her obligation under Illinois law. She's not made any good faith effort. She's been found at every stage that she does have the ability to work. And finally, I'll say that this court did not rule simply on the basis of her refusal to find work. It looked at all of the factors. It balanced the duration of the maintenance, the duration of the marriage, all of these other factors, and gave a balanced judgment that did not immediately terminate maintenance, but continued it for 2 more years.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions from the bench? Further questions from the bench?
I have one very simple one, counsel. Just to put an issue aside, the ability to pay is not an issue. Is that correct?
That's correct, Justice
Thank
Bertrand.
you.
Okay, any further? Nothing? Justice Peterson? No.
I have none. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for your argument, Mr. Schwab.
Thank you.
Mr. DiDomenico, you may reply.
Well, I like Germany. I think it'd be fun to go there, but I think that a lot of what you just heard was in it was were arguments that should have been made to the German courts and the German Courts of Appeal, because a lot of what Mr. Schwab just told you was effectively either trying to impeach the German judgment or complaining about it. The fact of the matter is the German judgment adjudicated the maintenance issue to a conclusion. It awarded her permanent maintenance. It imputed income to her based upon her failure to find a minimum wage job. And a lot of what you heard are effectively complaints about the judgment itself. This is a modification proceeding, okay? The question before the court is, was there a substantial change in circumstances? And the substantial change in circumstances was, according to the court and according to Mr. Schwab, are that some time has gone by and she has, in that time, also not gotten a minimum wage job. Mr. Schwab speculates, well, if she had gotten a minimum wage job, maybe this would have happened, and maybe that would have happened, and maybe this would have happened, and maybe it's just fine to terminate her maintenance prospectively in March of 2026. Let me tell you something else that the Shen court said. Trial judges cannot gaze into a crystal ball and foresee what the future holds for the parties. This explains why permanent maintenance is always modifiable or terminable upon a change in circumstances. What is this woman supposed to do in March of 2026? What is her station in life going to be then? We don't know that. Judge Skirin doesn't know that. Mr. Schwab in his argument is asking this court to engage in the very kind of speculation that the Illinois common law forbids in maintenance cases. That is exactly what is, and that's exactly what Judge Skirin is doing in his judgment. The fact of the matter is let's go back to the finding. It says, that the finding of the substantial change was that Ms. Liefke has the ability to work. The ability to work where? At a minimum wage level job. That is an adjudicated conclusion in Germany. It is an adjudicated conclusion in DuPage County. That is her ceiling. That is her upside. Wishing and hoping for something more is just speculation. And it is not forbidden. That is not permissible in court judgments. This court's been saying that for decades. And that's all that's going on here. They're just, if she would have gotten a job, maybe she would become self-sufficient. Who said that? There were German judgments. The judgment below is replete that she could never, a minimum wage level job could never afford her the ability to work with, to live within the marital standard of living, which is the benchmark for any marital, which is the benchmark for any maintenance award and in any maintenance modification proceeding. This award is effectively penal. And this determination of maintenance on this record and on these facts is effectively penal. I understand Mr. Schwab's point about that, is this a test case? And I acknowledge this notion of, okay, in permanent maintenance cases, what exactly is the duty, right, of the payee to become self-sufficient? How does that get factored in? And the answer to that question is, it depends. It depends who you're talking to and what the facts and circumstances are of the family before the court, as I said from the beginning. Is it a change in circumstances that my Liefke has not gotten a minimum wage job yet, even though one was imputed to her from the very beginning? No, of course not. What hope does she have beyond minimum wage to get to earn income that could possibly lead her to a path where she could on her own live within the marital standard of living? The answer is nothing. All courts agree that that could never happen. That minimum wage is her ceiling. That is the most that she could do. And again, I appreciate that I think it's Justice Bertani, you know, mentioned the Lenker case that sort of balances this notion of duty and what happens and what that duty means in the context of the entire maintenance calculus. And that it still comes down to whether or not that there is a, excuse me, that whether or not the recipient can live within the marital standard of living. That is the standard. And there is no question that that is no longer going to happen as of March 2026. Again, I bring you back again to what this court said in the Mattson case, that in that case, the payor made an argument on appeal that the court should have given dispositive weight to the lack of efforts to become self-sufficient. And this court said, no, you do not give dispositive status to that in a permanent maintenance case. And Mr. Schwab can try to spin Judge Skirin's order all he wants. No, I don't think any reasonable reader of the judgment, the entire decision brims with anger, frankly, toward my client's perceived lack of a willingness or ability to go out and get a minimum wage job. That is what this turned on. Okay. The only other factor that the judge really gave any consideration to was, as Mr. Schwab said, the length of the marriage and how much he's paid. But so what? that the German courts took that into consideration given the protracted proceedings and still awarded her permanent maintenance. And we're back in modification court just 2 years later after he pulled a shot, basically committing a fraud to get a default judgment, which he ended up agreeing to vacate when he got when the facts came to light. The fact of the matter is no court in a permanent maintenance case has ever done what this judge has done and what Mr. Schwab asks you to do, which is elevate this factor to dispositive status and to the level that where the result is a termination based upon when every other factor, when this woman needs this money to survive, to actually like keep living. This guy, I gave you a picture of his house. This guy probably spends more cutting his lawn and doing landscaping than he does paint or maintenance. And we want to talk about Zumba classes that this woman does to manage her pain on the advice of doctors, and that she pulled out a couple bucks at her deposition, and that she belongs to Costco. Is that where we're at here? Is that really what this turns on? Or are we trying to fulfill the original purpose of the award from the German courts, which is recognizing that this woman will never survive? Forget about living in the marital lifestyle. I'm talking about surviving absent an award of maintenance from somebody who can clearly afford to pay it, that nobody is suggesting can't afford to pay it. The
Mr.
abuse is.
DiDomenico, I've let you go beyond your time. Would you like to conclude
The
or
abuse,
make
yes, Justice
it
Holdridge. Thank you.
happen?
The abuse of discretion here, there was no change in circumstances. There was only the passage of time. Even if there was, the result in this case is inequitable and unfair as it gets, considering that every other factor weighs in favor of the continuation of my client's permanent maintenance. And Justice Holdridge, I thank you for your time, and unless your colleagues have any other further questions of me. I do.
Questions from the bench,
Do
justices?
not. No, thank
Okay.
you. Thank
Okay.
you.
Thank you, counsel, both for your spirited argument in this matter this afternoon. This matter will be taken under advisement and a written disposition shall issue. And at this time, the clerk of our court will escort you out of our remote courtroom and we'll proceed to the next case. Thank you.
Thank you.